I think a lot of people can be held back by the sort of negative feedback they might get sometimes, like people telling them that, oh, women aren't supposed to be in these positions or that positions. So I think ignoring the noise is a very critical skill if you're going to be a woman in this type of industry.
Welcome to the Products by Women podcast. I'm your host, Naimisha Murthy. In this podcast series, we'll be chatting with change makers, innovators, and the women behind the products across industries from tech to fashion to impact to education and everything else in between. We'll also be discussing a bunch of topics ranging from how products are built to obstacles women commonly face at a workplace. Oh, and do check us out at productsbywomen.com. We're building a skill-based platform that helps women find gaps in their skills and connects them to jobs, training opportunities, and mentorship. Today, a little over the one-year mark, our technical product and innovation community has a little over 8,000 plus members in 70 plus countries. So head over to our Slack community and connect with product peers around the world. Today we have with us Ire Aderyunkun, a self-taught front-end developer and user interface designer from Lagos, Nigeria. She's also the co-founder, COO, and VP of Engineering at Bycoins. Bycoins is the only exchange in Nigeria that allows Nigerians to buy and sell cryptocurrencies ranging from Bitcoins and Ethereum to Litecoins and Bitcoin Cash directly with a local bank account or debit card. Ire is a Google expert specializing in the core front-end technologies HTML, CSS, and JavaScript, but is passionate about all aspects of technology, and she has written hundreds of articles on these topics. Ire also regularly shares her knowledge through speaking at conferences around the world and in Africa. Hi, Ire, welcome. I'd like to start this chat by learning a little bit more about you. Where did you grow up and what has shaped you to be the person that you are today?
Yeah, I mean, what has shaped me to be the person I am? That's like kind of deep. But my name is Ire Aderyunkun and I'm 29 now. And for most of my life, I've lived in Nigeria. So I was born and raised there. I went to the UK, which is where I am now, mostly because of coronavirus. I went to the UK for sixth form and undergrad and master's. And then I moved back to Nigeria after that. And that's when I started working as like a software developer, so a front-end developer. So I went to school, like I said, most of my life in Nigeria until I moved to the UK for a bit. So I feel like I sort of had a mix of both cultures, but I would say, I guess I'm more tied to like Nigeria than I am to the UK.
Tell us a little bit about Bycoins. How did it come into being?
So like I said, I actually studied psychology for my undergraduate and I studied law for my master's, but I had always been interested in front-end development. I was sort of introduced to it when I was a kid or a teenager rather. And I used to play this online game called Neopets, and it allowed you to basically like personalize your profile page and things like that. And that's kind of how I was introduced to front-end development. So I had just basically been doing it as a hobby for a while. I didn't really take it all that seriously, but while I was in uni, I sort of rediscovered it and also like for the first time really understood what computer science was. So the degree that I probably should have done in the first place. When I graduated, I decided I was going to like try and I guess teach myself how to code and become a front-end developer. So I started doing like freelance work and then I kind of progressed and worked for a couple of companies. And then I met my now co-founder of Bycoins at one of the companies called Big Cabal, which is sort of like a BuzzFeed, but for Nigeria and for Africa. And we had basically worked on a bunch of other side projects together. So this was sort of just like another one. It wasn't really, from my perspective, I wasn't taking it all that seriously as, okay, this is going to be a company that I am like co-founding or anything. I was just like, oh, let's just build this thing that seems cool and it could be useful. And it basically grew from there. So basically now it's a cryptocurrency exchange, kind of similar to Coinbase, but just servicing the Nigerian and soon to be like the rest of Africa market.
What did the initial MVP really look like?
Yeah, it was a completely different product, actually. I mean, not completely different. It was still like a crypto exchange, but it was very different from what it is now. So what it is now, like I said, is sort of like a Coinbase-like product in the sense that a user just opens the app and they can buy or sell a range of currencies directly to us. But what it was initially was it was a peer-to-peer product because we didn't really have the infrastructure to do that Coinbase-like experience yet. So it was literally just like a platform that allowed other people to buy and sell with each other. And our platform was just there to, I guess, be the security. And also we had this escrow component to it, which was different to the other peer-to-peer platforms, which actually turned out to be working against us. It was something that we thought would be a great feature, but that was something that it turned out users didn't actually really want. So we definitely iterated a lot, especially when we went through Y Combinator. We came out with a completely different product, which is now like Bitcoins. We have like a completely new name and everything. At first it was called like Bitcoin Africa. We kind of transitioned to Bitcoins and what we are now.
You are a YC 2018 grad. How was that experience like? Any tips there? How can one create a good application and improve their chances of getting through YC Combinator?
Well, for us, we actually ended up applying twice. I know a lot of people apply a range of times. So it's actually very common to have applied once or a few times and to not necessarily get in the first time. So that's one thing that I guess if people are worried about, like if you haven't gotten in once, that doesn't mean you can't like apply again. When we first applied, we actually made the application the day that our MVP was launched. So we just had the product, but we didn't have users. We didn't really have anything really. We just kind of had to show like the product itself that we had built. And another notable thing about our application was that it was done almost entirely by my co-founder. So although all our names were on it, it's kind of the application itself kind of came across as if he was the only person really working on it. And I think that was actually the thing that was more important than our product growing. So the next time we applied, which was, I guess, like 6 months down the line, we had a bit more traction. I mean, we started to have like some users and things, but I think what actually made our application a lot stronger was the fact that all of us were more involved. Especially like, for example, I think they make you do a video just explaining your product and stuff. Like I was also in that on like the first time. So it definitely put forth like a stronger team. And one thing about YC is that they always say is that they are investing more in the founders than like the product itself, because so many people drastically changed their product during the process of going through like those 3 months. So it's not really about the product. It's about them trusting that the founders are like capable and also like very invested. So that's one thing I would say about, you know, making a good application, like making sure that everyone is invested and putting through your passion, like just showing that more than just saying, okay, we have this many users or we have that volume or whatever. Like, not that that's not important, but that's not what they actually care about as much as the founders showing that they're like invested and they're passionate about this.
So Ire, how can one design better products?
Well, what I would say is really the most important thing is just getting out an MVP as quickly as possible. And I think this is even more important than doing user testing, because although user testing is really important, and if we had done that, we also would have seen certain flaws in our design or in the application as a whole. I think nothing really shows as much as like having something out there that people can actually use. And it's a completely different experience when people are using a product to just kind of play around with it or test it versus if there's something that actually exists out there in the world. And that's one thing that we saw with Bitcoins or Bitcoin Africa versus a new product that we have called Zencash. And our approach with Zencash was just to get out like the most bare minimum version out there as soon as possible. The product is essentially, it's like a remittance product. So it allows people to send money from, I guess, outside Nigeria to someone in Nigeria or Ghana now, and it'll enter like their bank account in whatever their local currency is. What we did with that was that we just created like the bare minimum site, and we had users telling us, oh, they want this feature or they want that feature. And that was definitely a better approach than with the initial Bitcoin Africa, where we built out something that it turned out people didn't really want that much, and we had to then change things. So it's definitely better to just, you know, find out what the bare minimum of the product is, like the MVP, and just put that out there as soon as possible, and then iterate from there.
So Ire, do you have any tips for raising funds? What is a good starting point for early stage entrepreneurs?
Well, I think a pretty common thing to do is to basically start with whoever's around you. So maybe friends or family. Obviously, that also is a dependent on if you do have friends or family that are able to contribute. But that is kind of how we started. We just said, okay, we want to do this thing. And anyone that was around us could, you know, help support. Because like I said, at the beginning, it was also just like a side project. And we're just trying to see if it was a thing to even begin with. But I think nowadays, for people that maybe don't have that kind of access, there are organizations that do pre-seed investments. So we used one called Microtraction that was in Nigeria, and it gave us, I think, like $15,000. And I know that there's a new one that's specifically for women that's founded by one of my friends actually in Nigeria called First Check Africa. But I think these things are like starting to come up because people are starting to recognize that it's like a good time to get in. So I think if you just try and do some research for whatever location that you're in, if you can find those types of smaller organizations that are interested in giving a small amount and taking on that risk of founding or investing in a company that's like so new.
I want to focus on STEM and the importance of these skills for girls and women. Can you talk to us a little bit about how you got into the field?
Yeah, so as I mentioned, it was sort of just like a hobby, and it just kind of came out of interest in this tangential thing, right? It was, I guess, sort of like an accident, right? But I think once I just started building and working on it through like this online game, like I said, I just developed the interest and it became an interest in the coding or programming in itself. So I think early exposure is also really important, because I don't know, if you're not really exposed to it that early, you might not really consider it a thing. And I guess it's similar to what happened to me, in the sense that I didn't really know what computer science was. So even though I was making websites and stuff, I didn't really like put it together and say, oh, this is like a thing I can actually do. So I think education about this as an option is really important, particularly for girls and women, because a lot of the times we're kind of told that it's not something for us. Yeah, that's definitely really important.
Why does diversity and gender equality matter in STEM?
I mean, it's really important mainly because we're building things that people use basically every day. We're building essentially like utilities. If you think about, I don't know, like a toilet seat, for example, or a fridge or something like that, the people involved in building something like that ideally should have like the representation so that you are looking at it from all different types of aspects. So for example, for Apple, for example, right, they didn't even have in their health app something like menstrual tracking until just like a few years ago. And that's obviously just through a lack of representation, because how can it not occur to them to include this really crucial thing that, you know, 50% of the population have to deal with every single month, right? Or, I mean, you see things like, I saw one video on Twitter a few like months ago about Black guy trying to use like a hand dryer or something, and it just doesn't recognize like his skin. But if someone with like lighter skin tried to use it, it would come on immediately. And that's like just another example of, they clearly just did not test this with darker skin at all. So that's why representation is just really important, because otherwise like things just wouldn't really occur to the people involved, and just things, crucial things, will just be missed because it was never tested, or someone of a particular demographic just was never involved in the making of this product.
How has the pandemic impacted what you're trying to build, and where do you see Bycoins in a few years from now?
I mean, I think the pandemic hasn't been as detrimental or impactful to the way we work, mainly because as a, I guess, tech company, we were already slightly distributed. So we just kind of had to move to being a fully remote and distributed team. And it's actually just been mostly a positive thing for us, because it's also allowed us to open up like applications to people outside of just like Lagos, where we're based. So we now have someone that's based in Ghana, and that's only come from us just fully embracing being a remote distributed team. But in terms of like the product itself, I think there was definitely like an increase in the use and like interest in cryptocurrency, particularly like in Nigeria, because just during this whole pandemic, there were lots of issues with like the currency devaluing and just Forex being a lot harder to get. So people were actually starting to think about using things like cryptocurrency. So that has been like interesting for for us and been like a challenge in trying to educate people more and show how Bitcoins can be used. And people in general are just becoming less afraid of cryptocurrency because obviously a lot of people didn't really know that much about it. And it was for the most part associated with like scams and things like that. But I think people are now starting to see the actual valid use cases for it, especially things like Send Cash has been really helpful for people that are just trying to send money back home to Nigeria. And this is like a nice, cheap, fast alternative for them than trying to convert like dollars to Naira or things like that. And in terms of where we see Bitcoins in a few years, I mean, we kind of just see ourselves either building a suite of products using like cryptocurrency to just improve how Africans use money, or just being the infrastructure that enables other people to build like this suite of products. So with Send Cash, for example, we can see how we can expand it more and even abstract the crypto layer even more and just enabling people to save in currencies other than their local currency, which might be facing devaluation and things like that. So we just kind of see how money, especially within Africa, can be powered by cryptocurrency and blockchain. So we just kind of want to see how we can be a part of making that a reality.
And lastly, your advice to aspiring women-led ventures and entrepreneurs.
I mean, my advice around things like this is generally, although it sounds kind of simplistic, to kind of just go for it to some extent. I think a lot of people can be held back by the sort of negative feedback they might get sometimes, like people telling them that, oh, women aren't supposed to be in these positions or that position. So I think ignoring the noise is a very critical skill if you're going to be a woman in this type of industry. So just trying to, you know, block all of that out. And if you really believe that you're doing something or you're creating something that's useful, then just kind of going for it and not letting that noise really affect you. And I think this is even like good advice in general, outside of being a woman and just being like a startup founder, because you're just going to have a lot of like negative feedback, and you're going to have a lot of times when it feels like your company is about to die. And you have to just understand that it's like your decision to make, like you're the one that decides whether you let it die or not. You just have to either like keep going, or you have to just accept that you're not going to do it. So just kind of going for it and trusting your gut.
That's it for now. Thank you for listening. Oh, and before I leave you, just some updates and thoughts. If you or someone you know would like to be featured on this podcast, email us at info@productsbywomen.com. Also, check out our new job board that we've just soft launched. We update jobs in product, design, engineering, and more on a weekly cadence. Lastly, Products by Women Award deadline is fast approaching. So apply or nominate before Jan 8th at 6 p.m. Eastern. With that, it's me, Naimisha Murthy, signing off. Bye-bye, and see you soon in the next episode.